Iowa is a prairie state, but we do have forests. In fact, we have 43,917 acres of state forest land. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Mark Vitosh is a district forester with the Department of Natural Resources. We have four major and six minor state forests in Iowa. Today we'll talk about these beautiful areas and find out what makes each one of them special. Mark has been traveling around to the state forests recently, and he'll tell us what he's been seeing. Horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will also be here, and he and Mark will answer your questions. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Horticulturist Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension will be here a little later in the hour to answer your questions. But first, we're going to start a little farther afield than we usually go on the show, in Iowa's state forests. Mark Vitosh is a district forester with the Department of Natural Resources. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
And we don't usually think of forests when we think of Iowa, but of course, we do have them.
Yes, we do. We actually, we used to have over 6.5 million acres of forest in Iowa. Historically, probably 15% of the state was forested. And right now we're sitting at probably around 7%, 3 million acres. But especially along our rivers, our streams, we still have a lot of forest resource that is very valuable to Iowa.
We're going to talk about state forests today. And of course, a lot of us go to state parks, which often are heavily forested. What's the difference between a state forest and a state park?
Well, this is coming from a forester, so I probably don't have the official. But, you know, our main goal in the state forest is to demonstrate sound forest management and the principles of multiple use and sustainability. And so we're really looking at the resource as a multiple use, hunting, fishing, but we're actually looking at harvesting and managing the resource. In our state parks, we look at it a little different. Sometimes we throw out the word, we try to preserve it, but we're really trying to conserve all of our resources. But in our state parks, we don't actively manage it on a sustainable basis from a resource basis. Now, in our state parks, we do look at invasive species. We've actually changed a little bit in our state parks. We look at the whole resource and look at ways we can, even through some forest management activities, but harvesting is not a main goal in a state park. That's not something we do on a regular basis. We do have a salvage policy if we have a situation with a severe windstorm where we maybe need harvesting to manage those resources. But in our state forest, we're really looking at the beginning to the end, that some of these trees are actually on a rotation. So at some point, we may actually harvest them. In other areas, though, depending on what the resource is, we may have areas that never get harvested. But manage it on a sustainable for wood recreation, those is a little more intense in a state forest compared to a state park.
All right. We have four major state forests.
Correct. We have 10 total, and I'm not going to name them all, but we do have four major ones in different locations throughout the state.
So let's talk a little bit about let's focus on the four major ones, because they also have different kinds of forests in a few of these different areas. So why don't we start with Yellow River State Forest, which is in northeastern Iowa, right?
Right. Yellow River State Forest is in northeastern Iowa. It actually has about 9,000 acres of property. A lot of that is forested. The interesting thing about Yellow River, it's up in northeast Iowa. Near Harper's Ferry is the general area along the Mississippi where the Yellow River comes in. The interesting thing about it, the original acres of the Yellow River Forest were actually transferred to the National Park Service in 1949, which is now known as Efke Mounds National Monument. And then there's other acres that are actually part of the state forest.
Okay.
Now. But up there, that is one of the big things up there is it is actually part of the Efke Mounds Yellow River Forest Monument Conservation Area, which is very vital to habitat for some of our native neotropical bird species. So that's along that Mississippi River corridor. So there's a lot of continuous forest up there that's not fragmented as much. And that's very critical habitat to some of those neotropical species. The other thing about the Yellow River forest area is we just talked about it a couple weeks ago. It's got great fall color, and a lot of our state forests do. But it's a place up in northeast Iowa people like to travel. There's trout streams, native trout streams within that area. We have camping. There's a lot of different resources there. The other neat thing
And being affiliated with Effigy Mounds, does that mean that it's more, you'll see more tourists on the trails, that kind of thing that you might see in another state forest?
Well, it's they're not together now. They're actually separated. But, I mean, you can get in a lot of places up there and still not see people. I mean, it's very rolling up there. It's not flat, so it's unique that way. Another unique thing there is we have the only state-owned operated sawmill still operating at Yellow River State Forest. It actually was started in the 30s by the Civilian Conservation Corps, and they actually produced material from the forest to build some of the structures in our original state parks. So there's some very unique, and that still is an active sawmill that does sell material throughout the season.
What kind of forest is it? How would you characterize it?
I would call it a mixed hardwood forest, a lot of oak, some hickory, but very rich resource up in northeast Iowa. And when you get up in there, you get parts of little spots of pines and different things like that too, which is kind of unique, but maple, sugar maples mixed in. But I would call it a central hardwood forest.
All right. Let's go down to southeastern Iowa to Shimmick State Forest, which is also about the same size, about 9,000 acres, right?
Yeah, maybe a little more. Let's add 1,000 on there, about 10,000, depending on what list you look at. But Shimmick Forest is in southeast Iowa near Farmington. It basically covers parts of it are in Lee and Van Buren counties. And that's kind of the unique thing about these state forests, too. They're not always in the same place because guess what's in the middle? Crops and towns and different things like that. So one thing about our forest in Iowa is we don't have a lot of these huge continuous areas of forest. So some of our state forests are actually broken down into units, and they may be 6, 7, 8 units spread out over multiple counties. A couple of neat things about Shimmick is, I mean, it's in southeast Iowa, so you're going to have kind of an oak hickory, but maybe more white oak, whereas in Yellow River, you're going to see a mixture of white oak, but a lot of red oak. As you get down in southeast Iowa, you're going to get things like the white oak, black oak, even a unique one called blackjack oak, post oak, a few different unique, the environment's drier down there, so the white oak does quite a bit better down in that area than it does in some other parts. But it's one of the neat things, and we talked about one of the goals of our state forest is to educate people about forest management. And supposedly the oldest field day in Iowa was started in Shimmick Forest, and they started that back in 1978. So they have an annual forestry field day every fall. To kind of show people some of the different practices they're doing there and some of the different practices that people can do on their properties to promote their forest resource.
Let's go to the biggest state forest next, Stevens State Forest, which is pretty spread out, though, right?
Right. It covers 5 counties, Clark, Lucas, Monroe, Appanoose, and Davis counties. Kind of one of the unique things about it is, well, one thing about Shimmick is 98% of Shimmick is forested. Of all those acres, it's actually 98% is forested. In Stevens, 85% of that forest is covered with forest. Again, broken up in multiple units. But portions of it were originally bought by the federal government because they thought that they were going to put a national forest down there. That didn't work out, so it got transferred to the state. Now we have a very nice state forest. But again, that's kind of in the central part, so you're going to get some white oak, black oak, and some other unique species.
Very south central for people who aren't great with their county map. That's
around Sheraton would be the town down there, or Sheraton, however you're going to say it. But down in that general area is where that's located. The other thing to think about, though, in these state forests is it's not all about forest. We have some prairie spots, some actually native prairie, and we'll actually get in that when we talk about the Lost Hills. But so our units, it's not about just planting trees. We try to manage the entire resource, whatever it may be in those. And we have some unique spots throughout those different state forests.
Well, and let's talk about the Lost Hills. So okay. We'll go way out west.
Way out west. About 12,000 acres. It's basically along the Lost Hills, which, you know, the Lost Hills covers, I think, 200 miles up and down the border there. But that's not the whole state forest. The state forest is kind of in the middle of the Lost Hills. It's actually located between Sioux City and Council Bluffs, near a town called Pisgah. And there's about 6,000 acres of forest out of that 12,000. But they have about 3,800 or almost 4,000 acres of prairie and savanna. There's some really rich prairie soils, so rich out there. There's some of the highest quality native prairie is actually found in our state forest or in the Lost Hills area. And in the state forest itself, there's locations where they've found over 300 different species of plants in some of those prairie areas. I'm a tree guy, but I've been on the hills out there in the Lost Hills and some of our forest areas, and it is just unbelievable. Well, you get that mix of big blue stem, and then you see the leaf of the bur oak in your face, and you can't beat it. It's unique.
Are the state forests in Iowa, and I'm sure there's a mixture, are there any state forests in Iowa where it's virgin forest, where it hasn't been cut at some point?
Not that Mark Vitash knows of. There's very few areas in Iowa, period, that are really what we call virgin forest. Most of our forest through the entire state, not just our state forest, I'm talking private, county conservation, have been cut at least once, some twice, and some even three times.
Well, and then that's not unique to Iowa. That's everywhere.
Well,
in the United States, pretty much.
But in general, there really isn't much out there that hasn't been cut at least once. There's these just little pockets maybe where people claim that these areas haven't been cut, but it's very, very limited.
Are we seeing the effects of the drought this year in our state forests already?
Well, we're seeing the effects of drought, you know, throughout the state. I was talking earlier with you before the show about Christmas trees. We had a big impact.
And we'll talk more about that in another month or so on this show.
But we had a big impact on our seedlings that got planted. And in our state forest, we do some planting too. In areas where we do harvest and our active management, the thing is, all of our state forests have what we call a forest stewardship plan. It's a 20-year plan that really lays out what our goals are, what our objectives are. And within that, we lay out our harvest, all of our management that we do. But I would say the biggest impact was any type of seedling planting we did this year. We have seen some loss.
All right. And we can continue our conversation in a moment. We'll also open the phones. Richard Geron's going to be here in a minute. You can ask questions about trees or plants. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Mark Vitash, DNR District Forester. We've been talking about Iowa's state forest so far this hour. And you can ask questions about the state forests if you like. But, of course, Mark can also answer your tree questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Richard Geron is here now from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And, of course, Richard can answer all of your plant questions. You can give us a call again, 866-780-9100. And we're going to start with Cheryl on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I received a rose bush for Mother's Day, and it's potted in a round pot that's probably about 6 inches deep. And I'd like to put that into my garden, but I don't know if I'm too late, if I should let it just winter in the garage in the pot, or should I bring it in the house, or am I safe sticking it in the garden?
I would go ahead and plant it. That's your best option. And when you do so later on, around mid-November, take some soil from the garden and basically cover the bottom 8 to 12 inches of the rose canes with soil. And that will give it extra protection, and it should survive. But I'd get it in the ground as soon as you can, keep it well watered if it doesn't rain, and then cover the base with some soil around mid to late November.
All right. My garden is very well, I'm from Cedar Rapids, but my garden is very well, it does not get really brutal and cold in the winter because of the fencing and everything. I have garlic, for instance, that winters year-round and stays green almost all winter because it's such a warm area, the way the sun reflects off the fence. So will that be a little safer, too?
Well, I think you'll be fine if you cover it with some soil because the soil is a very good insulator, and that should protect it quite nicely. In most cases, it does.
Pardon me. Should I trim any of the canes back when it's planted, or just plant it as is?
Plant as is. Do expect some of the canes that stick above the soil to die, and that's okay. So just leave it as it is. Put the soil around the base. Cover that bottom 8 to 12 inches. And then remove that probably early April in your area, and then cut out any dead wood. And any dead wood will be easy to spot because it's going to be brown in color, and the live wood will be green. So just cut out the dead wood.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Cheryl. And next up, we're going to return to our state forest topic with Dick in Dubuque. Hello, Dick. What's your question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if on Mark's trip, he stopped at White Pine Hollow. I put a little plug in for that. It's this month is we're kind of celebrating in Dubuque. It's the 40th anniversary of White Pine Hollow being named a national landmark. But I just wondered if he took the temperature of the trees up there again, and you know what we can do about keeping that forest alive.
Well, and White Pine Hollow is fairly close to Dubuque.
Yeah, it's in western Dubuque County.
Okay. And before we let Mark talk about it, Dick, what makes it special to you?
Well, it's you know, you can descend down into the bowels of the earth, sort of going way down into the creeks. And, of course, the pines, walking under those pines are so majestic, it's like a cathedral.
All right. Well, that sounds beautiful. And we don't think about white pines in Iowa a lot.
It's basically the largest area of native white pine that we have in the state. And I've been there a few times. I haven't been there a bunch. And actually, when I went to White Pine Hollow, I got a hug, a 422-year-old white oak while I was up there. It's a very, like Dick said, a beautiful, beautiful place. You get up on some of those ridges and stuff with those white pines that are, for Iowa, pretty large white pines, and it's a beautiful resource, especially if you like big old churches and stuff as you go at Luxembourg and different towns up through there, some just very beautiful country. But it's a smaller unit, but it's one of those areas that it's got a very unique resource because we really don't have a lot of native white pine throughout the state, and most of it is in northeast Iowa, and that's one small postage stamp of what we have left.
And Dick, are the trails in White Pine Hollow nice?
Not really. You can get lost there. There are a few. There's a north entrance going on the way to Guttenberg, and there's a south entrance a mile west of Luxembourg. But it's the trails are. I've been lost there.
Take your compass is what I would suggest if you.
Because of the hills and the valleys, they all start looking the same. And if you're going to follow a creek, some of the creeks run north.
Start early in the day, and that way you'll get home by dark.
But we're probably going to have a hike there tomorrow. But like I say, it's the 40th anniversary of being named a national landmark.
Great call.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you so much, Dick. And, you know, there aren't that many places in Iowa where you can really get lost. I think that makes someplace special.
Well,
you can really lose yourself.
Actually, I sent out a note to some of our state, our area foresters, that we have four area foresters that cover these different state forests, and a number of them said there are some areas within some of the units where you can actually feel like there's nothing else around you. So you're right. There are not a lot of places like that in the state. There are some state parks that are like that, too, and some county conservation lands. But I know in a number of our state forests, there are units or areas you can go in and you feel like you're out in the western U.S. or somewhere unique. So they're still here. You just have to find them.
All right. Great resource. Next up, we're going to talk to David in Clear Lake. Hi, David.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, about this time of the year, a little earlier, I always look forward to going out in the forest and gathering up about 200 pounds of hen in the woods mushrooms, and have not seen them at all this year. And I wondered if it was because of the dry conditions, and is it too late with this last rain? Do you think they still might come out?
Well, I won't claim to be an expert, David. I think the weather has had a big impact, and I haven't heard, I know a few hunters that go out, and I haven't heard a lot of folks having a lot of luck like yourself. And with the temperatures starting to drop, and actually I believe in the next couple of days we're going to be in the 20s, I would say chances are probably pretty limited of the impact that the moisture is going to have on some new ones coming.
Okay. Just have to wait till next fall.
Yeah, but you know what, David? Spring's coming, and that means morale. So
yeah,
there's still something else out there.
I'll put a hen in the woods up against the morale any day, especially when they get 40, 50 pounds.
Well, yeah, but I'll still take the morale.
All right, David.
Great call. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call.
Have a good day. Thanks.
And you can join us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up is Sarah on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I'm a novice gardener, and I've appreciated your show over the many months I've been listening to it. I started composting this summer. I have a compost bin in the backyard, and I have two preformed garden plots sitting right next to it. I have no idea what to do at this point. Do I just leave it sit for the winter? Should I be doing something with the compost to mix it into the soil before we get a freeze? I'm not sure what my next step is.
Well, has it broken down quite a bit at this point?
Yeah, it has, although we still have a few pretty sizable chunks of watermelon and pumpkin
okay.
in there.
So I would continue to turn that maybe every week or so until about maybe mid to late November. Then at that point, it's really not going to do much at all during the winter months. And then in spring, probably late March, early April, start to turn it again. And hopefully by maybe late spring, it might be usable at that point, when it basically looks like soil. Everything
okay.
is kind of broken down. And then at that point, you can work it into your vegetable garden, your flower garden, whatever.
Great. And just work it in with like a pitchfork or something like that?
Well, I would apply it. And then if you have a tiller, great. You can till it in. If not, just use a spade or a shovel.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right, Sarah. Thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Next up, we're going to go to John on the line in New Hartford. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a small acreage which has some pretty good-sized red pines as well as some good-sized white pines. And most of them have done okay in the drought, but there's one good-sized red pine at the top foot or so from the ground, at least. It looks like all of the needles have turned brown. So is that one red pine a goner, or is there anything I can do? Or
well, there's a couple possibilities going on here, John, because actually for pines in general, the last 5 years have not been the greatest. Starting in 2008, we had a lot of moisture, and we had a lot of wet springs in 2009 and actually in 2010 too. So there was some stress on pines in general and a lot of our conifers, depending on the soil types. One thing we started seeing in 2009 and 2010, there's a couple different needle blights that some of the pines can get, and there's a tip blight that I've actually seen on red pine, Austrian pine. I don't tend to see it on white pine as much, but you may, if it's starting towards the tips or the top, you may be seeing something like that. If the other possibility, if the whole tree is starting to kind of turn brown, if the trees are stressed for one reason or another, which obviously the dryness And actually, red pines are semi-adaptive, so are white pines, to some drier conditions and actually even sandier soils. But we have some bark beetles that will come in, too. So one thing I would be looking, if these are tall trees, start looking around the ground on this tree that's showing symptoms to see if there's any sawdust coming down on the ground or if there was sawdust or anything on the trunk or anything like that. If you see that, you may have an active beetle attack going on that tree. So there could be a number of things going on. But generally, when you have a lot of brown on pines, especially on the top or the tips, they're usually going downward. Now, the other thing to think about is if that browning or yellowing is on the inside of the branches, so from the tip going on the inside, some of that is fall needle drop. And on red pines and white pines, they both will drop those inner needles, last year's needles or 2 years ago. And one thing I've noticed is when we have drier conditions, that transition to brown is more abrupt. But if you're seeing it on the tips, you could have one of these diseases, or you might be seeing some bark beetle activity.
Yeah. Well, it's actually the whole needle at the very top. 5 feet or something. I mean,
the whole top looks like it might be dead.
Brown, yeah. So
yeah.
Essentially dead. If that's the case, or if I see the sawdust, should I try to get it cut down?
If you see some beetle activity on that tree or anything like that, that's one that, you know, you don't have to get it cut today. But I would actually look at, if this isn't a large group of trees, between now and next spring. The one thing with beetle activity is you usually find small BB size or smaller holes where they've actually exited. I mean, with the temperatures going the way it is, they're not going to be active here. And they're probably not even active now. But if you can get rid of that tree or get it chipped up or get it burnt or get it removed from the site before next spring, if you see beetle activity, that's the best way to minimize their impact.
Yeah. So if I cut it down and burned it up, that'd work.
Right. And if you don't see any beetle activity, you might have one of these tip blights, because the tip blight actually can turn into what we call a canker. It can actually kill the whole branch. So you can have portions of the top actually die from that canker disease too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not going to climb up to the top to look at it. But.
Well, try some binoculars and take a look. And again, look on the ground for sawdust activity or even on the lower branches, because sometimes that'll, if there was, by now it may have probably blown away in the wind, but you could still look to see if there was any activity there.
Okay. That helps a lot.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we will go to Roger on the line in Duncan. Hello, Roger.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have two questions, actually. The first is regarding a butternut tree.
Okay.
What do you want to know about it, Roger?
Well, I understand there's some kind of a fungus or a disease that's killing the trees.
Yeah, butternut is a native. Another name for butternut is white walnut. It's actually a walnut.
I know that.
Yep, it's but
I have one.
Okay.
We planted two after I came back from Vietnam, which would make it about, what now, from 69 to whatever it is. So this one has survived. The twin got cowed, unfortunately. One of our cattle got out.
Oh, okay, got cowed. I got you.
Yeah.
All right. There is a disease.
This one seems to be doing pretty well.
Okay.
And I wondered if someone wanted to look at it to see if it was a survivor type tree that could be used to generate others.
Well, the disease you were talking about is actually called butternut canker. And what you would see is often kind of a black or dark target deadness of the bark throughout the branches, sometimes starting at the top, but you'll even see these cankers on the trunk and you'd start to get some dieback. You may want to contact Extension Forestry at Iowa State in Ames, because they look at that. And also call our State Forest Nursery in Ames. We have a specialist that deals with walnut, and sometimes they may be interested, or we talk to the U.S. Forest Service that I do know they have come to Iowa at times to actually collect material from some of our butternut to see if there's some tolerance. So I would start with Iowa State University Extension Forestry in Ames, and also our state nursery. Talk to the folks up there. We have a specialist there, Aaron Flickinger, who has dealt with some of these things, and they may be interested in looking at it.
Okay, Roger, thank you so much for your call. It would be wonderful if that could help produce a strain of butternuts that weren't susceptible. And we can take your questions in a moment. With me today, Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester. Richard Giron is also here, horticulturist from Iowa State University Extension. And he and Mark can answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. You can join us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension, and Mark Vitosh, a district forester with the Department of Natural Resources. And you can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we're going to go to Melody on the line from Bloomfield. Hello, Melody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, a couple of weeks ago, I planted three big clumps of snow bamboo. It said to keep it moist. And I have been, but we're going to have supposedly a hard freeze tonight. After it freezes, do I continue to worry about watering it, or is that my job over for this season?
Well, I'm not familiar with that plant, but typically when you plant a tree, a shrub, or a perennial, you basically keep watering it until the ground freezes.
Oh, okay.
So that probably would be, I would guess, early December or so.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Tony on the line from Tipton. Hi, Tony.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I'm interested in a tree that I'd like to plant. It's called a cut-leaf weeping birch. I see a lot of them in Utah and Idaho, and I'm wondering if you know anything about it and why there are none. I've never seen them here in Iowa, and there must be some reason.
Well, I'll give my 5 cents, and then Richard can throw his other 5 cents in. A cut leaf, and I don't know what variety. There's cut leaf is a general term for the leaf, and as you probably know, but the leaf isn't its full size, and it actually looks more ornamental. That could be a variety of a number of different birches. I mean, you could actually maybe find a cut leaf river birch, a cut leaf paper birch. So I would look at species of birches in Iowa that do okay. River birch does okay when it's in moist conditions, gets good water coming to it. It's not high and dry, which is Betula nigra. So I would look to see if there's any river birches that come in a variety of cut leaf. And then the other one is paper birch, and there's one called Heritage, I believe. And there's a couple others out there that the thing with paper birch, they do better up in Northeast Iowa, and they like a cool kind of moist. So you're probably looking at just varietal difference. Some of these European selections don't do well in the heat, high and dry. So that's probably why you're not seeing it as much. So I would look to something like a river birch to see if it comes in a cut leaf form. Richard?
Yeah. And I would agree, if it's a white barked birch, they're not very heat and drought tolerant. So this past summer would have been horrific for them. And that weakens the plant, and then they're attacked by an insect, the bronze birch borer. And that bronze birch borer basically kills the tree. So you might plant the tree it might look good for maybe 5 or 10 years, and then the heat and the drought catches up with it, and the tree dies.
But then, Tony, you've got good firewood, or you've got good ornamental logs that have white bark that you can put somewhere. So you could plant it that way if you wanted.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't be interested in that. But the ones I've seen out in Utah and the southeastern Idaho, it's really dry out there. And these trees are just absolutely beautiful. The ones I've seen are about 18 inches across in the trunk, about a couple of feet above the ground. And the leaves are like a little maple leaf, but
right.
They're very small.
Right.
And the bark is absolutely pure white. And I thought, what a beautiful tree. But there must be some reason that you don't see them around here in Iowa.
And I'm not sure which selection, like I said, Tony, I'm not sure what selection that would be out there. I'd have to look to see if I could find what that is. But it could be one of the European varieties that has some white bark that maybe is more adaptive to those conditions.
All right, Tony, thanks a lot for your call. Let's go to email for a little while. This is from Ellen. She says, we recently purchased some land which has 12 acres of woods. We'd like some guidance about how to manage the timber. Who could I contact about giving advice for its maintenance? I'm having a little trouble getting responses from state agencies.
Well, she can contact her local district forester, and depending what part of the state she lives in, we're available, and I'm one of those in the Iowa City area. They can come out, look at her woodlands, give her recommendations, kind of listen to why she's trying to manage it, and give her some guidelines on how to manage that. If she just goes to our iowadnr.gov site and then clicks on, I think it's environment, you can go to forestry, and then there's a list. It says forestry landowner assistance, and there's a map there. Depending on her county, she can then locate who her district forester is in her area.
All right, and You schedule pretty far in advance, right?
I'm scheduling into middle to late November right now.
Okay. All right.
And most foresters, we're anywhere from 6 to sometimes 12 weeks out as far as our commitments, yes.
All right. Here's another email from Meredith. She says, I have 5 acres of timber in eastern Jasper County and want help with eradication. And I'm going to say this wrong, but honeysuckle, Tartarian?
Tartarian, yeah.
Tartarian honeysuckle. Mm. She says, my goats love it, but they don't want to stay home. And then she says she also wants assistance with the timber's fate when she's gone.
Well, again, Jasper County, the forester is actually out of Adel, so she can go to that map again and find, I believe it's George Warford that covers Jasper County. The thing with honeysuckle, it really depends on the timber. There's a couple ways. Goats are kind of like a weed whacker. You cut it off, but with honeysuckle, it's going to keep sprouting back. So even if the goats stay there, they eat it, it will keep sprouting back. So she has a couple options. One of the options is she has smaller plants, usually those 1 to 3 foot plants. You can pull those. I was actually out last Saturday after the rains and stuff in a woodland, and we were hand pulling honeysuckle that was 2 to 3 feet tall, and it was coming out very well. That's a lot of work. But when you get into the 4 to 5 to 6, and honeysuckle can get 8 to 10 feet tall, you can't pull those things out. So with that, you have to look at cutting and treating with a registered herbicide, such as Roundup, and there's others that are available, but you basically cut that, and then immediately after you cut that, you want to treat that stump so they don't sprout back. A third option is, depending on her woodland and depending on the character of the woodlands, sometimes we can reintroduce prescribed fire as a tool that as you start cutting those areas. So for every, she has it all over the place. For every big one she cuts, there's probably a kajillion little ones coming. Sometimes we can use prescribed fire in the right setting at the right time of year to try to minimize it coming back, too. The thing with it is once you start to get it out of there, if you can clean it up fairly well, it's a lot easier to manage when there's only a few plants starting to come. Then you can use pulling and those things. But if you have a large area infested, you got to slowly chip away at it, get it kind of back down on the ground, and then it's a lot easier to manage. So a district forester could help give her some guidelines depending on the character of her forest as far as what would work best.
Okay, and as far as assistance with the timber's fate when she's gone?
Well, there's a couple options. There's a couple different organizations out there. There's the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Sometimes within your county, you might have a foundation or an organization or a trust that there's things called conservation easements that you can look at. And the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation has a great little booklet for property owners that talks about basically what are ways to preserve or protect an area that you like or that you own in the future. And sometimes conservation easements are a way to at least minimize development or basically guide how that property will be managed into the future. So I would contact the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, get their little management booklet on some of those ways to protect their resources.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Next up is Marcy on the line from Mechanicsville. Hi, Marcy.
Hi. I had a question about a willow tree. We have two large willow trees. They're about 15 years old, I would say. And in one of the storms that we had this past summer, we lost a large branch, I would say probably maybe about 9 to 10 inches across. My father-in-law cut it down, but he left it quite jagged. And there's, it wasn't a professional job. It's kind of split because the whole branch like split in half.
Uh huh.
And I just wanted to make sure that do we need to cut that smooth so that it can heal properly, or is it okay the way it is?
Well, here's the thing, Marcy. If we have a thing on the branch or the trunk called the branch collar. So as that stub goes back to the main stem, there's a swelling there. If you can cut it back to what they call the branch collar, then that tree will have a better opportunity to seal that wound. Because trees don't really heal. They actually seal. They actually make a chemical barrier inside the tree to keep decay from moving in, and then they put new wood that grows over that wound and actually seals or closes that wound. So if you can cut it back to that branch collar, that'll allow that proper sealing, and then you don't need to use any wound dressing or anything like that. If you leave a stub, then that's where the decay can start to continue work down into the tree. And the thing with willows, they're fast growing, but they're weaker wooded, and they're very susceptible to decay. So if you can prune it in a way to let it seal, it's going to be better. Iowa State has a good publication on proper pruning that shows where that branch collar is and where to cut that branch.
Okay. Well, I think, unfortunately, he cut it quite close to the trunk.
Okay. So he made kind of a flush cut?
No, it's not flush at all. It's where he cut it. It's kind of split.
Oh, okay.
That's why I was kind of concerned about it, because it almost looks like it's going into the trunk where it's split.
Okay. Also, part of the trunk may actually be split.
Yeah. Just at the very very, where the branch met the trunk.
Well.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. If you can, you may want to have a commercial arborist just look at it to evaluate it to see what the structure is. Because, again, with willow, if there's a crack or anything in the trunk or in that union, that could be potential for future problems. The thing is, if there's no collar left and he just cut it, there's probably not much more he can do to clean it up. I mean, if it is kind of jagged, you may be able to smooth it out a little more, but it depends where that's located versus the trunk itself.
All right, Marcy, good luck with that. And next up, let's go to Joan on the line in Charles City. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I was downtown Charles City the other day and saw a beautiful white iris in full blossom, and I'm wondering if it's going to make it through the winter.
I'm guessing it will. There are some repeat blooming irises, not a lot, but there are some that will bloom in the spring, but also late summer, possibly early fall.
Yeah, well, it was just gorgeous. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Joan. Let's go back to email. This is from Jane. She says, I have a perplexing problem. The squirrels in our yard have been eating the tips of the branches of our maple trees and a large yew, littering our yard with piles of branch tips and leaf clusters. Just the last portion of the branch falls. Can you tell me the reason for this? And while the trees and yew are quite large, I'm concerned that damage is being caused.
This is a pretty common thing this time of year. I see it on oak. I've seen it on maple.
Very common.
Yep. And I think it's because they can.
Yeah.
And they like to – there is some nutrient value in that tissue, but if you look when they cut those – they don't really chew on them, and they don't appear to suck the juice out or anything like that. They just kind of cut. Now, I do know their teeth grow, and I think that's part of the maturing of their teeth is they do cut those things. Other feeders to maybe discourage them, other things like that. But
are they hurting the trees?
Well, on most larger trees, that's not going to be a real negative thing because
it's
they tend
to. It's not really in their best interest to damage the tree, I wouldn't think.
Well, but no, but do you think they're really thinking about that?
I don't think so.
No. So there's not much you can do to discourage them. It is kind of seasonal, tends to be this time of year and then sometimes in the winter, but they'll do it on many different varieties of species. I've seen it on white pine. Spruces, ash, you name it. They'll do it on a lot of variety of species.
Okay. Mary's on the line next from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I just have a quick question. I heard you talking about sawdust from trees, and I have a large maple out in the backyard, and I believe it has carpenter ants in mm-hmm. it. And I'm wondering, I've seen this sawdust for repeated years. Do you think it's safe to leave the tree up?
That would be the question. The carpenter ants, per se, are not a problem. They're just making their home in the soft, moist, decaying wood. But their presence does confirm the fact there is some rot there. And and if the rot is extensive, then obviously the strength of that tree has been compromised. It may not be structurally sound. And then if that tree happens to be near a structure, like a house or garage,
right.
Then it becomes a hazard tree. And you can never predict when that tree may come down. So I guess I would suggest if it is near a house or structure that you have an arborist examine that tree and give you his or her opinion. Because if it is a hazard tree and the decay is extensive, it probably should come down.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot for your call. And I think we have time to squeeze in one more email question. This is from Mark in North Dallas County. He says, I spend a lot of time at Ledges State Park and love the oaks. I sometimes have trouble identifying which species it may be. I've seen white, burr, swamp white, and chinkapin. I have heard that oaks freely hybridize in the wild. How often does this happen, and how could I tell if it's a hybrid?
Well, it happens quite a bit, but they're usually fairly close. One thing he could do if he has one that he's not sure, he could take it to the local extension office or he could take it to his local district forester in those areas.
Take a picture, take a leaf,
send it, and we can take a look. And it depends on species. A couple species that hybridize a lot are the black oaks and the red oaks.
Okay.
But it does happen.
Fascinating. Mark Vitosh, thank you very much.
Thank you, as always.
Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester. Richard Giron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Horticulturist Richard Giron with Iowa State University Extension. We'll be back with Horticulture Day next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Ames today from Garrett Van Leeuwen. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.